Welcome to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Today we continue our Voices of Wellness series with a report from WBGO's Janice Kirkell on the status of healthcare in New Jersey.
I know she's talked about, for example, going after pharmaceutical benefit managers, the middlemen who negotiate drug prices. And so she may have some tools to go after those middlemen. And I think there are members of the legislature who also want to.
And I'll chat with Yankees legend and jazz guitarist Bernie Williams and violinist Katia Lindor about their upcoming performance at Carnegie Hall.
A night of jazz, pop, operatic music, sports, and the presence of, you know, representing the Latino community and the people of New York. You know, we are a melting pot here. So I think it's just a great opportunity, great vision, and I'm just so glad to be part of the event.
All this coming up today on the WBGO Journal. Mikey Sherrill is set to take office January 20th as the next governor of New Jersey. What challenges will she face in the area of healthcare, and what options does she have for addressing them? WBGO's Janice Kirkell asked two of the state's former health commissioners.
The list of issues is long, including subsidies for insurance premiums, drug prices, Medicaid enrollment, vaccine guidelines, and maternal health. And it all comes at a time when Washington is cutting funding for healthcare, leaving the state with many holes to fill. Heather Howard became health commissioner in 2008 when John Corzine was governor. She was associate director of the Domestic Policy Council during the Clinton administration and is now a professor at Princeton. Since talking to us, she's been named to Sherrill's Affordable Health Care Action Team on the transition staff. She says the new governor will have plenty of cost-cutting opportunities.
There's the cost of your insurance. There's the cost of your pharmacy, right? I mean, people get hit in the pocket everywhere they go in healthcare. And so I think she'll probably be thinking about how she can address it in those various arenas.
Howard says New Jersey may have its own answer to the battle over extending Obamacare subsidies that was the reason for the government shutdown.
The state has funded its own subsidies. So I think the state has a track record of doing better than most other states and leaning into those programs. So I imagine she will take advantage of that infrastructure. It's just going to be harder because the federal funding has gone away.
Mary O'Dowd, who was the state's health commissioner from 2011 to 2015 while Chris Christie was governor, is currently the executive director of health systems and population health integration for Rutgers Health. She agrees that the state can help make up the difference here.
New Jersey also has the opportunity through the state budget to invest public health funding in areas where the federal government doesn't provide funding. And that's something that would be a great opportunity for New Jersey in the coming year.
Sherrill has vowed to sue the Trump administration to claw back federal funds in a number of areas, including health care. And while campaigning, she focused on the Medicaid cuts the budget bill signed into law in July would cause. O'Dowd says it contains provisions that would make more demands of Medicaid recipients, such as having to renew eligibility every 6 months. And a new federal work requirement is set to take effect in 2027, which could further complicate enrollment and likely result in people losing benefits. She says all this puts a strain on recipients and agencies.
Some of the federal proposals include new requirements around work or submitting additional documentation. And that comes with effort on both an individual perspective, but also organizations who can support individuals in enrollment.
She says the state needs to partner with those organizations to make sure those eligible for Medicaid remain enrolled. Still, she says the result may be more people with no coverage, leaving the state to find other solutions.
There is the potential that if we see an increase in the uninsured, we'll be going back to that, those programs, and perhaps requiring additional investment in those initiatives that support the health care providers that continue to provide services to those who are uninsured.
Those providers include hospitals and federally qualified health centers that cover those with no coverage. The budget bill has more to say about Medicaid, specifically that Planned Parenthood will be blocked from receiving federal Medicaid reimbursements. Howard says the state will have to step up here as well.
New Jersey has a long history of strong support for reproductive health care services, and so that's an area where Governor-elect Sherrill also can lean into the state's history of supporting access.
Howard says lowering drug prices will also be high on Sherrill's to-do list.
I know she's talked about, for example, going after pharmaceutical benefit managers, the middlemen who negotiate drug prices. And so she may have some tools to go after those middlemen. And I think there are members of the legislature who also want to.
She says these benefit managers could find themselves out of a job.
The state could create their own PBM and say, why should there be a middleman who's taking a significant cut? Could the state negotiate? That's one idea. That's an idea that other states are considering.
Changes in vaccine guidelines have cast doubt on their availability going forward. Howard says a multi-state approach may be the answer here.
We're also seeing states team up with other states. New Jersey's already been doing that, and I would imagine that Governor-elect Sherrill might be interested in teaming up with Northeastern states, for example, on vaccines. As we're seeing the undermining of federal support for vaccines.
Vaccine availability is only half the battle, though. People need information about them to be encouraged to get them, says O'Dowd.
One of the measures that we should consider is really becoming very focused on hyper-local vaccine education so that individuals who have concerns can learn more about the benefits and risks.
With the disruption at the Centers for Disease Control that has brought changes in federal regulations in a number of areas, or no recommendations at all, O'Dowd pointed out that New Jersey has led the way at times when federal guidance was lacking, and sometimes the feds have even taken their cue from the state.
New Jersey was the first state in the country to put together or to create and implement a newborn screening program for heart defects for newborns in the hospital. And a month later, the federal government followed suit.
There are areas, though, where the state is failing, one being maternal mortality among Black women, who in New Jersey, Howard says, are 7 times more likely to die during or after pregnancy than white women.
New Jersey has the highest rate of Black maternal mortality. So that's been a focus for the Murphy administration, and I would expect that to continue under Governor Sherrill.
Howard cited structural racism in healthcare systems, as well as lack of access to health insurance and health care, and hospital neglect as the causes. For the WBGO Journal, I'm Janice Kirkell.
Janice Kirkell's feature is part of our Voices of Wellness series, made possible in part by a grant from the Horizon Foundation for New Jersey. My guests today are not only connected with New York baseball, but they've also become a part of its musical fabric with an upcoming performance at Carnegie Hall on January 13th. New York Yankees great 4-time World Series champion, Latin Grammy-nominated jazz guitarist Bernie Williams is here. It's great to have you back, Bernie.
Oh my God, thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure talking to you, and thank you so much for having me on the show.
Indeed, my pleasure. You came to the WBGO studios in 2009, I remember, to be a guest on Sports Jam and to join soon-to-be NEA Jazz Master Rhonda Hamilton for an hour on WBGO, and you played live. I also recently spoke to you about your partnership with Gil Parris and your wonderful work together on stage. Also joining us is violinist Katia Lindor, who's part of this special concert at Carnegie Hall. Katia is not only a wonderful musician in her own right, but she's also married to New York Mets superstar Francisco Lindor. Katia, so glad you could join us today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Bernie, what will it mean for you to play at Carnegie Hall with award-winning tenor Jonathan Tettelman for an evening uniting opera, jazz, and sports?
Yeah, I think it's a great thing. I feel so excited about the fact that we all have this opportunity. It's a very unique opportunity when I can mix the worlds of sports and music and our Latin heritage, you know, all in one place. And if you could say, I mean, one of the best venues, you know, for music in the world, you talk about Carnegie Hall. When I was a young student in Puerto Rico at La Escuela Libre de Música in San Juan, I would never envision in a million years that I would have this opportunity to play baseball in this great city, but also to have the bonus of performing in one of the best venues in the world for classical music and all kinds of music. So this is certainly a dream come true.
For you, Katia, both the heritage for you, Bernie and Francisco, the Puerto Rican heritage is strong. And so I'm sure this is a very special event for you.
It is indeed. I'm honored to share the stage with the incredible musicians, you know, that are going to be participating. And similar to Bernie, you know, growing up in Puerto Rico, you always dream of one day reaching, you know, the big stages that are, you know, a lot of them in New York, and Carnegie being one of those that you never really think that that's going to happen in your lifetime, you know. But I had the amazing opportunity to be a part of something even bigger than music and sports, right? This is sort of like about humanity and bridging the gap between two worlds that maybe normally wouldn't mesh. And I think that's something really cool and beautiful. And the fact that a fellow Puerto Rican has, you know, so many incredible accolades also is pretty special. So I admire Bernie so much.
Yeah, and when we talk about Puerto Rican heritage, we have to talk about Roberto Clemente, whose jersey is behind me. Katia, you performed the national anthem on September 16th at Citi Field this past season as the Mets crushed the Padres. What was that experience like for you as your husband and three children looked on?
That was definitely special, a very unique evening. It was celebrating Hispanic Heritage Night, which was really special. And then to see my husband and my children, on the field cheering me on, it was something really cool. And I got a small glimpse of what my husband does every day. And I, you know, I admire him even more for that because that's going on, you know, like the big stage, as they say, every single night with thousands of fans looking upon you. That's no easy thing to do, but then to perform at such an elite level as you know he does, and all of these athletes, it's pretty incredible. So this table's flipped there for a minute and a half, what the anthem lasted, and it was really cool. It was definitely special.
Francisco was wearing Roberto Clemente's number 21 jersey for the Mets that day. He led the Mets led off in the first inning with a single and then smacked a home run, too. It was quite a day for the Lindor family, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
But you know what that means, right? That means that you have to sing, you have to play the anthem more frequently because, you know, this is an unwritten rule. When you play the anthem and your team wins, you know, you start building a record. So you started with a good winning record. So you got to keep that going.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
Bernie knows all about playing the national anthem before sporting events and does an amazing job with it as well. What is your thoughts about Roberto Clemente before we move on, Bernie?
I mean, he is, I'm sure, I don't want to speak for Katia, but I mean, obviously, our heritage and our legacy in baseball has been sort of passed, along this, this line of great players. And in my generation, we grew up idolizing Roberto, and not necessarily for what he did on the field, because he was obviously a Hall of Fame baseball player, but I think his legacy becomes even more important because of what he did off the field. He was an advocate for minorities in baseball and in society. He was a loud voice for the Latino cause, in baseball, and everywhere he went, he was always very proud of representing his country with the dignity and all that, that entailed. And he was a hero. I mean, I was a baby, maybe about 4 years old when he tragically passed away. In that, in his effort to bring aid to a country that was stricken by an earthquake in Nicaragua, and he tragically passed away. So, I mean, if there's a way of canonizing and make the Mount Rushmore of saints in Puerto Rico, Roberto Clemente is certainly one of them, and our inspiration, for doing what we do. I mean, we took a page of his book every time we play on the field, and every time we come out of doing things like this, we are certainly representing, what he symbolized for all of us, and it's just a great example to follow.
The new doc, Clemente, features Francisco Lindor talking about Roberto's play. It's a wonderful documentary, and I advise everybody to watch it. I got a chance to see Roberto play in the 1971 World Series as the Pirates went on to win. It was Game 5 that I saw, but the Pirates went on to beat the Baltimore Orioles in winning the World Series. Bernie Williams has won four World Series. How do you compare winning World Series to playing at Carnegie Hall?
Well, I mean, it is basically the same way. You kind of have to approach it. How do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice. So I think, apply the same kind of laws into anything that you do in life. There's no shortcuts. There's a lot of hard work involved. And what people tend to see is the result of all those countless hours of just going through scales and arpeggios and going through the batting cages and hitting soft toss and doing all of that. Is great that we have an opportunity to show people, all the results of all that hard work. But I think it comes from the same source. I mean, you have an upbringing, you have your parents supporting, you have a supporting cast of people that, it's trying to make life easy for you so you can do the things that you're supposed to be doing. And I'm pretty sure Katia knows this. I mean, she is not only Francisco, doing his thing on the field. He relies on a supporting cast of people that he trusts completely to make sure that he is in a good position to do what he does. And that's why Kathy is so important in his life and the family, trying to keep the family together. So my, kudos to Katia. And after all of that, being able to play the violin at the level that she plays it, I mean, it just, she's another superstar in that family.
You minored in
Thank
music.
you.
Yeah, you minored in music in college, Katya. When was the first time you picked up the violin and somebody said, "Hey, you're pretty good"?
I mean, I started when I was four, so there was nothing virtuoso about me at the time. I learned little by little, step by step. And it was, obviously, as Bernie says, that system, that support system that was pushing me and kind of shaping me was my mom. She forced me to practice. I say forced because as a little 4-year-old, I'm like, oh, this again, but she made sure I practiced every day, and I learned with the Suzuki method, right? So the philosophy was, if you ate today, then you practice today, right? And so my mom applied that. And when I resisted the practicing, she said, well, I guess you're not having your meal today. Obviously, I think she would never have not fed me, but I was very food motivated. So I was like, nope, I'm practicing because I'm not missing my meal of the day. I mean, obviously multiple meals, but it turned from that into something I actually obviously enjoyed and Then I became disciplined in the way that I could sit myself down and practice without my mom telling me to, right? But you know, it's quite a persistence from the parents, because when you're that small, it's really the parents that are like driving you and shaping you and kind of making sure that you learn that discipline and that drive so that you can carry that on later in life. And so, yeah, that's how it started. And then, you know, I kind of just carried on with violin. That was my life kind of revolved around my violin and my music.
Talk about patience for parents. Your mom has to have great patience because the
Yes.
violin played poorly at the age of four can be one of the most obnoxious sounds we can hear, right?
For sure. Yes. I'm trying to get my 5-year-old now into it, and you know, I see, I appreciate even more the patience my mom had with me. And it was my sister and me. My sister's 4 years older than I am, so we both played the violin growing up. And I have a second daughter, so I'm just thinking of doing it with both of them. And it's hard work. It's hard work. My mom homeschooled us too, so you know, kudos to her.
Yeah, everybody that sees the Lindor children, the two daughters and son, they are the most beautiful kids you could ever have. They adorable is how you can refer to them. Bernie, how did this night come about? Jonathan Tettelman, the award-winning tenor, will be performing with you. How did this all work out?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question because I think it's a lot of it had to do with the presence and the vision of one Adam Unger. He was a former bat boy for the visiting team, when Yankee Stadium. He actually became a minor league player himself, and he started, I think, from a very young age, being involved in music as well, singing. I believe that he became a baritone. And he is now, practicing sports law in the city of New York. And he always had this vision to reunite his world of music with the world of sports. He had this great idea to kind of pair me with somebody from the classical world because he was more involved in the classical music, in arias and operatic music. And we've been talking about this for the last 10 years. And he just happens to be a great friend of John Tettelman and this world-renowned tenor that is singing all over the world. So he they kind of combined ideas, and they came up with this great opportunity for me, for Katya, and for everybody involved, where we can have the sum of the parts being bigger than the individuals, having a night of jazz, pop, operatic music, sports. And the presence of representing the Latino community and the people of New York. We are a melting pot here. So I think it's just a great opportunity, great vision, and I'm just so glad to be part of the event.
Yeah, it will be spectacular, and there are quite a few wonderful musicians that will be joining both of you on stage. So, Bernie, we have Yankees and Mets fans interested in this wonderful event. I will never forget when you first came in to do Sports Jam back in 2009 that you talked about writing a song for your daughter, and I said, "Is this the same Bernie Williams who was this great baseball player? You are so deep and have such love for family. You just opened up like a book, Bernie." And it was like Bernie didn't talk a lot when he was with the Yankees. He just performed on the field.
Yeah, you just gotta find the right subject for me to talk about. Then I'll be a chatterbox. Writing songs is a way of me expressing some feelings and emotions that might be a little bit harder to express, with my thoughts, with my words. So that song that I wrote for Beatriz was Lullaby for Beatrice, and she was, I think I wrote it when she was about 8 or 9 years old. And my thought process was, she is like in the crib, being a little baby. And I was writing, I was thinking about, how will she grow up as an adult? What was she going to become? Is she going to be a scientist? Is she going to be a lawyer? Is she going to be a painter? So it was basically with that sense of awe and gratitude that I, put, those notes in the paper to write a song for her. And every time she listens to it, she kind of cries. The older she gets, she's now in 30, and the older she gets to appreciate even more. And I am so grateful that I have this ability, a God-given ability that took a lot of work to sort of develop, but is one of the great vehicles that I have to express my emotions in a way that words can't express.
Oh, Katya, look what you have to look forward to. You have three very young kids. Do you play the violin for them, and have you written a song for them?
Yes, to the first question. I played for them ever since they were, in my womb. I have yet to write songs for them. I'm not necessarily a songwriter, but I feel like that could come. It just takes a strike of inspiration, right? And maybe some time to sit down and write, because I feel like I haven't been able to finish a book cover to cover since becoming a mom. There's like very limited time, and when I can carve out an hour, to practice, I'll do that. And then it takes a support system. I have my sister helping me with the kids, and it's like if she wasn't around, I wouldn't be able to do some of these things that I do. I have a podcast, and I rely on people to kind of take over with the kids when I'm, carving out those few hours to do those things. And in the off season, Francisco will take over with the kids a lot more, but in season it's a lot harder.
Before we let you go, do you want to tell us a little bit more about the podcast?
Sure, yeah, it's called the Unapparent Podcast. It's a play on words, unapparent with one P. It's a parenting podcast, right? But I tie in a lot of relevant social, economic, social, political, social justice topics through a parenting lens. So I advocate for, paid maternity leave, maternal health, women's health, mental health, just a lot of topics that I think are important, and that as parents they become even more important. Like childcare is so expensive, and I speak from a very privileged position that I don't have to worry about a lot of these things, but I care about people, and I know not everyone has the privileges I have, and so it's one of my passions and duties. I feel my responsibilities to speak for, minorities and people who kind of struggle. I'm a mom, and it's hard, and I have so much privilege and help. I just, I can't imagine for people who are struggling with all the same things, plus a lot more, barriers that they shouldn't be. And so I talk about a lot of these things on my podcast.
Yeah, well said. And you're always there supporting your husband at the field. We see the family, and it's
Yes.
very a very beautiful experience. So first of all, thank you so much, Katia, for joining us today, and we look forward to your performance on the 13th of January at Carnegie Hall.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bernie, before we let you go, as you got the word that this was going to happen outside of family, who was the first person you had to tell? I'm playing Carnegie Hall.
Probably had to be a lot of my musical friends. I made a barrage of texts, just announcing the news. I have some great friends in Puerto Rico that sort of carry me in my musical journey there, and sports as well. And I have a really good friend in Westchester County, Gil Parris. We have been, kind of my mentor all these years. We have been playing together for the last 20 years in various events, jam sessions, recordings, concerts. He definitely was very excited about that, and I'm pretty sure he's going to go there as well. But obviously, I have a lot of people to thank for this opportunity, because you don't do these things in a vacuum. Like Katya says, we have a support system of people that help you, they mentor you along the way, and they facilitate things for you. So I am so very blessed to have that opportunity to thank all these people, and I'm pretty sure I will be able to thank them out there at Carnegie Hall. My success is their success. They can certainly relate to that as well. So I'm very excited about the possibilities, and hopefully this will be not a culmination, but the beginning of good things to come. And certainly hope that that is the case.
Once again, it's January 13th at Carnegie Hall. Bernie Williams in concert. Katya Lindor and others will be on stage with him. It will be a wonderful night of music. You can see my entire interview with Bernie Williams and Katya Lindor on the WBGO YouTube channel. Thanks for listening to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Join us next Saturday morning at 5:30 for another edition of the award-winning WBGO Journal. In the meantime, stay tuned to the world's greatest jazz and blues station, WBGO and WBGO.org.